The theme for tonight's talk is called To Touch the Earth. The Buddha, at the time of his great awakening, 2,500 years ago, sat on the ground under the Bodhi tree, which is actually Ficus religiosa, is its actually correct name, which means sacred fig. And he reached down and touched the earth and asked the earth to bear witness to his great awakening experience. We could equally say, we could now ask, we are now asked to bear witness to what is happening to our earth. It's our turn to wake up, to listen to the earth, to care for it, to be wise stewards of our precious planet. And nature can be such a place of refuge, a sanctuary for the sore heart and the tired mind. And we come here to this retreat in this beautiful place and notice how you feel when you walk through the gardens, gaze at the beauty, that stunning, amazing full moon, coming out of the ocean, golden ball of radiance, listening to the birds, their squabble and their squawk, the party going on in the symphony in the trees there in the forest. So when we walk and sit in nature, it's so easy to feel that symbiotic relationship with the trees, with the nature, breathing in the oxygen, breathing out carbon dioxide, that is then the trees absorb, and through photosynthesis circulate life-giving oxygen. And we breathe in the forest, and the forest breathes in us. There's this beautiful reciprocal relationship here. But when there are fierce storms, ferocious fires that ravage the land, devastating floods, then the full force of nature can be also quite terrifying. Leave us feeling devastated, leave some people feeling powerless and homeless and vulnerable. And of course, the current crisis and recovery is front and centre, but the backdrop is the larger ecological crisis that we are facing. Deep ecology, or spiritual ecology, or also called eco-dharma, is a response to this present ecological crisis. The physical reality of climate change, the biodiversity reality of species loss, it's called the sixth mass extinction event that we're going through. The ecological reality of the life systems under siege are not by accident. They are the effects of how we choose to live on this earth. Our relationship to this earth has never been more pressing. Tim Flannery, a wonderful Australian writer, in his book Here on Earth, asks, what is our history and relationship to this earth? Is it one of a trail of destruction that we leave behind us? A legacy of trashed ecosystems and vanished species? Or have we humans succeeded because we are also innovative and great cooperators too? And what is the earth? Is it a dead lump of rock or a living thing whose destiny depends on our choices, the choices that we make? Deep ecology is a call to find a new relationship with our wild, intricate sanctuary and home. Venerable Thich Nhat Hanh, beloved Zen master, was also my teacher for many years, has these contemplative practices called touching the earth, which is a practice that's repeated six times. It's such a beautiful practice, and I thought I'd share this with you and speak about it tonight. It can be done as a bowing ritual or, like the Buddha, to reach out and touch the earth, touch the floor, but this floor is also resting on the earth. You can reach out and touch the earth, or as a gesture. When we touch the earth, we go for refuge with our whole body, whole mind. The intention of this practice is to return to our own source of wisdom and the realization and the wisdom that we are not separate from Mother Earth and all of life. The one who walks, who bows and touches the earth, and the one who is bowed to the earth are one and the same. And when we practice like that, a wondrous feeling of interbeing arises. This deep sense of interconnectedness. And it's very interesting that over the last decade or so, it's now common practice that at the beginning of retreats or conferences or workshops, that we acknowledge country and the traditional owners of the First Nation people who have cared for this country since time immemorial. And so this opening brings us back to a sense of place, rooted in place and connection with country, and how country connects with us. And it's interesting when we connect with country and we walk through country that our whole system, our nervous system starts to relax down. People sleep better. And you say hello to country. Yeah? Form that relationship. So the first practice is to touch the earth with gratitude. We bow in gratitude to all our ancestors of our own personal bloodline, then elders and wise spiritual ancestors. It's an acknowledgement that I carry within me the lifeblood, experience, wisdom and happiness and sorrow of all generations. I practice in order to open my heart, to settle into my bones, to receive the energy of insight, love and experience inherited and transmitted to me by all our ancestors. And when we open to that sense of gratitude, that deep sense of that we are also made of stardust, right from the beginning of the Big Bang, that stardust is still here. It's an evolutionary journey of 13.7 billion years old. That's how old we are. So when we open to the gratitude from our ancestors, the Aboriginal Indigenous people have a practice of the opening to the dream time, opening to the law. And they allow the voice of the ancestors to come through them. They tap into something. They're like the collective unconscious. Yeah? And they tap into that wisdom which they express in that which was, that which is, that which is every when. That which was, that which is, that which is every when. Is the wisdom of this timeless place that we are also those connections, all of those connections coming forth in us, as us. And there's gratitude for our senses, the simple breath that keeps us alive, the soft animal of our body, our magnificent, complicated eyes to see your beautiful faces. These hands that reach out and hold and caress and create and play with the world. So gratitude is a forerunner for loving kindness and connects us to what has value. Gratitude focuses on what we already have in our life rather than what we don't have. It fills our heart up despite our flaws and our failings. So abiding, learning to abide in gratitude of being and having enough, challenges that consumer-driven culture of acquiring more and more and more. That materialistic drive is based on an unchecked desire and a sense of lack inside. That sense of lack is called dukkha. So we are seduced to believe that if we have more things, it will make us happy. But this just is an endless kind of pursuit, an unrelenting project of gaining, acquiring, seeking, and ending in dissatisfaction. That circle, that constant circle, it only satisfies us for a temporary period of time. Then the movement of the mind keeps going. So awakening gratitude cuts through that pattern, and our heart does fill up with that sense of appreciation and full sense of being enough as we are. Brother David Steindl Rust, who's a very interesting Benedictine monk and abbot of Big Sur Monastery in California. He also has done a lot of interesting Zen retreats as well. And he said he has a whole community called Grateful Living. There's thousands of people who are part of that community. He said, when we cultivate gratefulness to life, we practice again and again, saying yes to our limitless belonging to this earth household that roots us and makes us at home. It gives us that great feeling of at-homeness. It's a beautiful sense of gratitude bringing us home. Yeah. I had the wonderful privilege to spend time with Uncle Max Harrison Dulmanman, Aboriginal elder from the south coast of Sydney. He held two dreaming stories, and he died last year, sadly. And he had a wonderful ritual, Aboriginal ritual of gratitude. It was a morning ritual. We'd go down to the beach and stand on the beach in a circle and just right at dawn, just as you know, in the dark, but then we were right there at dawn. And there would be a gratitude circle of naming, gratitude for Mother Sun, gratitude for the earth, gratitude for Sister Moon, gratitude for Old Man Gum, gratitude for the water element. And so it would just go on. Just keep naming this, you know, elements of nature. That sense of gratitude, and everyone would just pitch in to say something that they felt grateful for. And so there's this incredible circle. If you spend 15 minutes, 20 minutes doing that, it's just an amazing sense of gratitude just keeps expanding and expanding for things that we just take for granted. That's an incredibly simple yet powerful sense of arising gratitude. And, you know, addressing nature like that with a kinship sense of relationship is real honouring that connection to country. So we practice touching the earth with gratitude. Just invite you, each of you, at this moment, to reach down and touch the floor, touch the carpet, and just take a moment to touch, knowing the carpet and the floor is connected to this earth. We reach down with gratitude for all that we have been given, this great nature that is our home. So the second practice is that we touch the earth to honour the pain of the world. And that is a great task that asks us to open our hearts and to turn towards the suffering in ourselves and others. And practice helps us come to terms with life's pains. Having an island of refuge, a strong, grounded base of mindfulness, gives us that courage to move deeper into life and to respond from a place of clarity and lend a compassionate hand. And when we connect to our own vulnerability, it opens a door to feel and connect with others. No one wants to suffer or be harmed. And as we attend to our own pain and suffering and we grow that response of compassion and tending, befriending and attending, we can transform those reactive patterns. We are then liberated from those behaviours and conditions and the tendencies of mind that bind us. And when you step out of those deep-seated tendencies of mind, we've all here at times let go of some of those kind or seen into some of those deep grooves in the habits of mind by witnessing them with mindfulness, not buying into those messages, those old beliefs. We free ourselves from those places that bind us. And when we do that, we break the trance and pain that has passed down the generations, and it ends the suffering. It stops here with you. We also don't keep passing on our unresolved, unprocessed issues onto our children or descendants either. And it's a great work of turning towards that which is difficult. Zen Master Thich Nhat Hanh was asked what we need to do to help our world. He said, "What we most need to do," he replied, "is to hear within us the sound of the earth crying." And he said, "It is calling us to be attentive, to wake up and listen. The earth needs our attention. It needs us to help heal its body, damaged by our exploitation and wounded by our desecration, our forgetfulness of its sacred nature. We need to act from a place of real awareness, attentive to the outer and inner need of the earth." That's a great call, to be attentive. In Joanna Macy's book, Active Hope, the subtitle is "How Do We Face What Is Happening to Our World Without Going Crazy?" which I think is absolutely spot on. We open our hearts and we open to what's happening. It can be quite overwhelming, painful to see. And she offers a map for the work that reconnects. And the practice gives us a space to acknowledge and face our grief and loss of what is happening to our natural environment. Those disappearing fish stocks, the melting of the ice caps, deforestation and habitat loss at a massive rate, pollution of the river systems, that is drinking water for millions and millions of people. Heard a wonderful talk by an interesting Asian woman who is a great environmental activist. Her name's Dekala. She studies in the States. She works with Joanna and Joan Halifax Roshi. And she gave a presentation of what's happening in Asia. The five great river systems, or six great river systems, the Ganges, the Yangtze, the Brahmaputra, the Yellow River, the Mekong, and the Indus River. And along the banks of those river systems are millions and millions and millions of people. And those river systems, the lifeblood, the flow, the water, drinking water for millions and millions and millions of people, is polluted. Yeah? It's also reducing down, being dammed at various places. The forests have been logged. The Ganges is not like this great river system that it used to be. It's reducing down to a stream. It's absolutely shocking. And the millions and millions and millions of people are going to be affected by this water, the lack of water. If not, it will trigger the water wars. So to touch the earth, the second practice is to touch the earth and to acknowledge our grief and pain for the world, for what is happening. So I invite you, in your way right now, what you know, to touch the earth with an acknowledgement of your grief for this world. It takes great courage to open our hearts to the grief and the pain of what's happening in our world. The fourth practice is I touch the earth to awaken our deep roots of interconnectedness, which reveal our profound caring and connection with all of life. Zen Master Dogen said, "The earth is our great body, our actual body. Its beauty, its biological systems, the mountains, rivers, stones and clouds, this too is our great nature. This too is our great body." And Chief Seattle, American Indian, said that the earth and I are of one mind. To open to that level of consciousness. Joe Harjo's poem invites us. It's called Remember. Remember the earth whose skin you are. Red earth, black earth, yellow earth, white, brown earth. We are earth. Remember the plants, trees, animal life, who have their tribes, their families, their histories too. Talk to them. Listen to them. They are alive poems within you. Remember the wind. Remember her voice. She knows the origin of this universe. Remember you are all people, and all people are you. Remember you are this universe, and this universe is you. So the earth has many bountiful gifts too that we have received. Those basic elements, earth, water, fire and air. How much is unconditionally given to us, like the very ground under our feet. Every moment of our lives on the ground, the gravity enables us to rest, to walk, to sleep, to stand, to sit. It is a gift that is freely given without exception or charge. This gravity that holds us here. From the moment we are born to the moment we die, the earth cradles us unconditionally. Whether we see this as a miracle of life or as part of the independent fabric of causes and conditions that make up our life as we know it, to see the miracle of life is to be free from our self-centered stories and to be open to the support that is right under our feet. I touch the earth and bow, knowing I am a continuation of all that has gone before me. The 12th century Zen master Hong Zhe said, "All beings are our ancestors. All beings are our ancestors." Opens us up to that cycle of life and death. The indigenous people, the person sitting next to you, the indifferent bystander, the children's laughter and tears. It also opens us up to the sparrow and the hawk, the wolf and the hunter, the whales splashing in the ocean as they go up the coast, the snakes, the possums. All these too are our ancestors. To the bird, the mountains and the morning star, the native forests, we say, "This is me. I allow that energy to flow through me by connecting to all those parts of ourselves, even parts that we have ignored or buried. We are making ourselves and our society whole again by opening up to that interconnectedness." And we can see here that in our practice, when we deepen into that spacious awareness, the heart does fall open. We can experience that sense of vividness, connectedness, and it's clearly here. We really feel and see and know and experience that everyone and everything is none other than our very self, an expanded sense of consciousness. Yeah. So we can settle into that. The fifth practice is, I touch the earth with love. We cultivate and incline our mind towards loving presence and compassion. And the practice of the boundless heart teachings of love, compassion, joy, and equanimity help us establish the immeasurable qualities of the heart. And we find that crack, where the light gets in. That vulnerability, that's where the light gets in. And that's that very crack where the light also shines out into the world and can flow out into the world. Thich Nhat Hanh said, touching the earth must be a real practice, not an exercise for your imagination, and not an exercise of blind faith. I touch the earth with love for my fellow beings so that their hearts will receive the nectar of love and blossom like a flower, he said. So let's touch the earth this time with a love and respect. Touch the earth with love. And notice our bodies and minds touch the earth. The boundary between our individual self dissolves, and our heart becomes as wide as the world, inclusive and interconnected. And this is a truth that we can realize. Professor Jem Bendel, who's done a lot of work in deep adaptation work in facing the climate crisis, said a key aspect of this deep adaptation ethos is to find a motivation for embodying loving presence, loving responses to our predicament without the expectation of a specific outcome. And I think this is incredibly important for activists to hear, to do the work. We are called to do this work, but without attachment to outcome. And that's a difficult thing, So as we touch one another and the earth with love, it gives rise to joy and wonder. Wonder at the starry heavens, a welling up of awe before the vast, mysterious, and compelling unknownness of things. Wonder is propelled by love for this amazing, phenomenal reality where we find ourselves living here. And how important it is to touch the heart and open to the wonder and joy. Carol's beautiful, extraordinary talk yesterday on the relationship between sorrow and wonder and joy. And in a delightful book called Phosphorescence by Julia Baird, who is also a journalist and host on The Drum TV show, Current Affairs. And when she was recovering from breast cancer, she went chasing phosphorescence, which is a type of photoluminescence, a literal substance which glows and emanates light. Sometimes on the waves and the ocean, it kind of has this green light, this phosphorescence that you can see, particularly in Tasmania, I've heard, and in various parts of the coast, every now and then there's this kind of green light, phosphorescence in the ocean. And it's a kind of magical thing. And people go chasing it and go, yeah, well, you kind of find out where it is appearing next and go looking for it. And so she went chasing phosphorescence for a while as a healing kind of remedy and metaphor. And this is a metaphor for seeking things that sustain her, seeking awe and wonder of things when the world goes dark. So how important it is to seek that awe and wonder and joy, yeah, when the world goes dark, when you're having dark and difficult times. And Mary Oliver, in her poem, in the last paragraphs in her poem, When Death Comes, has a lovely evocation where she says, rather than having just visited this world, she invites us, she says, I want to be a bride married to amazement. A bridegroom taking the world into my arms. I just love those lines. I want to be a bride married to amazement. Yeah. So easy to be married to amazement, stepping outside, looking at the full moon and the glistening light on the ocean there. Married to amazement here. Right here, before our very eyes. And in Ellen Bass's poem called If You Knew, in the last paragraph of her poem, she said, what would people look like if only we could see them as they really are, soaked in honey, stung and swollen, reckless, pinned against time. What would it be like if we could see people like they really are? So let us touch this earth with the joy and wonder as a bride married to amazement, as a bridegroom carrying the world in your arms. Last practice is, I touch the earth with wisdom and wise action. The Buddha arose from the seat of his enlightenment after 6 weeks He spent 6 weeks enjoying his samadhi and freedom. And he had this conversation in his mind about why teach, you know. The deva kind of came and appeared to him and sort of invited him to teach, you know, what he had discerned. And he said, why teach? It's so bothersome and stressful. Bothersome and stressful, says the Buddha. No one will understand this subtle and profound teaching. A deva appeared and said to him, but there are some beings with little dust in their eyes. I beg you, Master, please, teach the truth that you have discerned. And I always get emotional when I read those lines. There are some beings with little dust in their eyes. And so the Buddha heard that request. And luckily for us, he did get up from his seat and took on board the bothersome and stressful art of teaching. And he walked a long way from Bodh Gaya under Figus Religiosa and walked all the way to Sarnath, you know, the deer park in Sarnath, where his 5 ascetic friends were sitting in the deer park. And so he gave the first teachings of turning the Dharma wheel there. And so luckily for us, that Dharma wheel is still turning, that we can hear those teachings. But Joanna said, because the relationship between oneself and the world is reciprocal, it is not a matter of first getting enlightened or saved and then acting. Thank goodness. As we work to heal the earth heals us. No need to wait. As we care enough to take risks, we lose the grip of the ego and begin to come home to our true nature. So either way, whether it's the call for the inner world to wake up. Sometimes we're called from the outer world too, and the action in the world also cultivates our character and wakes us up. Yeah. Over the past 3 decades, a transformative view of life, now known as the inactive view, has been developed and expanded by thinkers in philosophy and the science of mind. And prominent among them was the late Chilean neuroscientist and philosopher and Buddhist practitioner, Francisco Varela. I don't know if any of you know Francisco Varela's work, but quite extraordinary man. And he was a much loved and dear friend of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. The inactive view that living beings are fundamentally sense-making creatures that bring forth meaning in their interactions with the physical and social environments. So we are sense-making creatures through our interaction. When faced with such difficulty, he said, the only thing that makes sense anymore is compassionate action. It's the only thing that makes sense anymore in this world. I touch the earth to embody the liberating wisdom of awakening. In this transient world of dewdrops, things are always arising, ceasing, being broken and mended, being born and dying. This impermanence is a hallmark of our existence. Yet at the same time, at the heart of the Buddha's teachings, there is a profound realization within every dewdrop. Within every breath, every moment, there is the truth of our essential nature. If we dive deeply into the particular, we also open out into the universal. And the universal and the ocean of our essential nature is right here in this individual, just as you are. The emptiness and fullness of who we are, we come home to our true selves. I'd like to share just a little story of Thich Nhat Hanh before he died, not long before he died. He died in January, earlier this year, end of January, the beginning of the January retreat. And he was very elderly at the time, and according to the tradition and his much-loved disciples, when there is an awakened human being, an enlightened sage, in Asia they choose to build a stupa. Stupa is a beautiful, big, sort of often white stone shape, stupa. Have a new, unique shape. And so this disciple asked him, said, you know, please, can we build a stupa for you? And Thich Nhat Hanh's response, because this is where you put the ashes in the stupa. Please do not build a stupa for me. Please do not put my ashes in a vase and lock me inside that stupa and limit who I am. If you must build a stupa, though, make sure that you put a sign, put up a sign that says, I am not in here. If they do not understand, you can also put up a second sign that says, I am not out there. If you still don't understand, you can put up a third and last sign that says, if I am anywhere, it is in your mindful breathing and in your peaceful steps upon this earth. This is where you find me. This is where you find the truth of your eternal nature that is right here. Powerful teaching. So let's sit together with mountains, rivers, trees, plants, animals, birds, clouds, the sun and the moon and the stars, and with the painful ache of Mother Earth, the looming ecological crisis that we face, the loss of habitat, the suffering here, there, everywhere, and the joyful peace within, here, there, everywhere. So I'd like to just close with eco-sattva vows that are often recited in the various eco-dharma trainings as we touch the earth. I vow to myself and to each of you to commit myself daily to the healing of our world and the welfare of all beings, to live on earth more lightly and less violently in the food, products, and energy I consume, to draw strength and guidance from the living earth, the ancestors, the future generations, and my brothers and sisters of all species, to support others in our work for the world and to ask for help when I need it, to pursue a daily practice that clarifies my mind, strengthens my heart, and supports me in observing and maintaining these vows, to touch the earth. And here we touch all beings and ourselves and our great nature. Thank you for listening.